Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's lucky episode number 193. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Matt. It's nice to talk to you. I got to ask, and feel free to lie, but are you a little tipsy right now?
No, and people need to know this off the top. I did say to Amy, pour me a little more Viognier, and then I went, ha, ha, ha.
It was a cackle. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a cackle. I did that for laughs. I mean, that was more showman. Now, if we're on the pod for 2 hours, then re-ask me, because I'm up at Amy's cottage, Whitestone Lake, which is just out of Parry Sound. I got the fire going, glass of wine in my hand. So, you know, it's a very nice, relaxed environment, but it still is early before the tipsy stage.
I like how romantic the setting is, and your thought is, I better call Bob and talk about the Leafs.
Bob, we got the Raptors to talk about, Carson Wentz. There's romance in the air. How was your Valentine's Day? What did you and Sandra do? Was it as romantic as when you proposed to her?
Nope, not quite that romantic. What did we do? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, Matt, look, we've covered this terrain a million times. You guys over-celebrate and we under-celebrate. In between the two of us, there's a normal, healthy couple.
Yes, you're right. It's so true. But, you know, I mean, Amy and I, you know, we went out for dinner. Then we went dancing. Then we went to this pop-up club that was packed. It was fantastic.
Well, that sounds very fun. We did the same. By
the way, Bob, you know how I treat Valentine's Day? To me, it's like New Year's. It's just an excuse to buy a slightly nicer cut of meat, open up a slightly nicer bottle of wine. I just basically cooked up some steak and, you know, we had mashed potatoes and I opened up an old bottle of Bordeaux and it was just the two of us just hanging out watching The Magnificent Miss Maisel. That was my Valentine's Day.
So it's interesting you brought up TV because I've decided something. You've got to get Disney Plus because all these Marvel shows are coming.
Yeah.
You're unable to talk about them because now the expiry, the parameters of expiry on a spoiler alert now is like about 15 minutes because Twitter just makes it possible, right?
It's so true.
So you're going to have to watch these things now so that we can talk about them. There's going to be a bazillion TV shows in the future. It's not going to be like the movies where you got to wait 6 months in between them. Movies are like boxing, where there's a good match every 6 months, and TV is like UFC, where there's a fight every week.
It's so true. Well, do you want to talk about Ted Lasso? We could do A Good Place.
Pardon me? Say the second one?
A Good Place with Kristen Bell and Ted Danson.
I believe it's The Good Place, but it sounds like you like it.
Oh, my God. Ted Lasso. So good. Bald like.
I haven't watched The Good Place yet, but I want you to watch WandaVision because it's the perfect show for dissecting. I'm not even sure it is a show. I think it's just a gigantic Easter egg with certain plot elements.
Well, I do now have Disney because we got it off someone's friend. I don't know who. But I can't wait to watch The Mandalorian. I hear this Gina Carano character is fantastic. She's the bee's knees, and she's going nowhere. I can't wait to watch.
Mandalorian's good. I think WandaVision's more interesting, but it's such a cheat with Marvel, because when you're sucked in to the universe, I actually realized today, because I finished watching episode 7 of WandaVision, I don't even ask myself if I like it. I just ask myself, what does it mean? What did I learn? What clues did I get? What can I figure out? And I swear, I immediately run to the internet, immediately, to see what, you know, Den of Geek is saying and the Nerdist is saying. And it's hard to be a sucker. Well,
by the way, Bob, I know that you love WandaVision because you tweet about three things. You tweet about the odd political thing. Then you have some sort of like artsy but very smart inspirational tweets, often, you know, quoting some jazz musician or author. And then WandaVision. Those are your three things you tweet about.
So I can actually put them into categories for you if you'd like.
Ooh, yes, political of course.
Stuff is I'm so angry. The artsy stuff is I'm so hopeful.
Yeah.
And the WandaVision stuff is I'm so tired.
I like that. That's good. Yeah, that's so angry, hopeful, and tired.
You those can are like exactly how I feel based on what tweet I just sent.
Basically, those are the rejected, depressing dwarves from Snow White.
I get a lot of I don't get a lot of hate on Twitter because I don't think anyone takes me seriously. But when I send my political stuff out every once in a while, I'll get back. So you're a Justin Trudeau lover. And I think, no, not especially. Like, no, I think he's done some stuff okay. I think he's done some stuff pretty bad. This vaccine rollout doesn't seem to be going very well. But I'm always amazed about how if you say one thing, it must mean you belong to the other camp.
Oh,
I don't get that.
Bob, you are so right. But here's the best part. You're more left than I am.
Yeah.
But I sent out a tweet, and it was basically, I was actually just kind of making fun of how predictable Twitter is and my Twitter timeline is, which is still very left. And I sent out a tweet going, what's harder to do, defend Ted Cruz or criticize Dolly Parton?
Yeah,
you know, Dolly Parton. Yeah. Yeah. Dolly Parton with a wonderful thing with the statue, Ted Cruz with Cancun and all of that. And someone immediately just figured, you know, blah, blah, blah. What about Chris Cuomo and New York and the, you know, and the nursing homes there? And like basically saying, oh, you're just a real lefty. And I love when someone does that, when they assume I'm a real lefty. It's hilarious.
I don't know if lefties, the average lefties, has as many pictures of shellfish on their Instagram account. I follow a lot of feeds and you seem to have more shellfish than everyone else.
Yeah, that is true. I do love my shrimp. It's getting me through COVID, Bob. Shrimp is getting me through COVID.
Yeah, there it is. You're the crustacean grim reaper.
It's true. Crustaceans see me coming. They go running.
Mm-hmm. So are we going to talk sports today?
We are. I have a Leafs and Raptors thought for you, but I do want to throw out one other non-sports thing. Just because it's Friday and there's a roaring fire. What is your most stereotypical maleness thing? And by that, I mean, like, I can't fix a flat. I don't care about cars. But if there's one thing I love doing, it's building and maintaining a fire. Like, I'm just like, everyone get out of my way and I will do it and I will focus on it for the entire night. You know, that is my, you know, old timey stereotypical male thing to do. And I'm wondering what yours is.
So I don't know if this is a male thing or not. I just know that the men in my life seem to do this or have done this historically, but I eat out of the pot. I don't need it to go to a plate. Like as soon as it's cooked, I'm happy to stand there in an undershirt and just spoon it out of the pot into my mouth.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a guy thing or not. I don't think I've ever seen a woman do it, but that doesn't mean they don't. It just means maybe I haven't seen it. But I watched my grandfather do that for years. And it's funny because I don't feel like I'm becoming my dad. I actually feel like I'm becoming my grandfather. I saw myself.
You skipped a generation.
The other day and I said, holy shit, that's Gigi's nose. And yeah. You know, undershirts, garlic. I seem to have taken a recent fascination with playing cards. Like, I don't know. I think I'm turning into my grandfather.
Hmm. That's not the worst thing in the world. Of course, turning into your dad is pretty awesome as well, at least in terms of accomplishments and wonderful mustaches.
That's true. Well, I got my dad's mustache and my grandfather's table manners. So there you go.
I'm going to push back. I'm going to push back for a quick second. You don't have your dad's mustache. Your dad's mustache is your dad's mustache.
No, it's true. He's got the Ned Flanders. He looks so much like Ned Flanders.
That's true.
It is so true. I want to get back to this maintain the fire thing. Do you get like artistic about it where you try to lay the log perfectly for maximum cresting?
Oh, yes. Oh, God. Absolutely. Like, Bob, here's how sad it is. Mm-hmm. I'll have a giant, you know, the giant log is in flames and is going, and I'm taking tiny slivers of wood, of little tiny pieces of kindling, and I'm placing them just so. It's half artistic, half science about so trying to maintain the fire.
You basically helicopter parent the fire.
Yes. Yeah, that is exactly it.
So it's weird how that happens. Do you take it personally when there's only embers, like you did something wrong?
I get so angry when I've done all this work. I leave for 2 minutes and I come back and the wood is kind of gone out. I get so angry by that. And I'm like, and I feel like it betrayed me, you know, like if my child only got a B+ on their physics exam.
You know, it's funny you say that about the fire. I kind of get that, you know, like I don't even know how to drive. Never mind, like, you know, I have no relationship with the car because there is no car. And I'm not especially fond of barbecuing. And I suppose these are the sort of traditional hallmarks of like classic North American maleness. But I'm kind of with you on this one. I like to be the keeper of the flame too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very primal, cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had one going right now. All right. Let's talk about the Leafs. Shall we get into the Leafs?
Absolutely.
Carson Wentz, where you choose. You choose. You're the fire starter. You go.
Well, let's start with the Leafs. I think the most impressive thing about Austin Matthews, he makes the hard, and this is, you know, the classic thing of the elite players. The number one trait of an elite player in any sport, in any facet, is they make the hard thing look easy. The hardest thing to do in hockey is score on even strength. Matthews makes it look easy.
You know, that's a really good point because, like, what would it be in football? The hardest thing would be to throw into coverage, right?
I would say throw into double coverage, throw into like a really tight space or that like 20-yard out, which is really like a 40-yard pass if you actually do the math on it. I would say that's the hardest.
See, I'm just imagining Aaron Rodgers while you say this. And sometimes when he just seems to thread the ball between two DBs and you're like, how the sweet Lord did he do that? But you're right. He almost come to expect it and there's a grace to it. Austin Matthews right now is... I don't know. My Toronto-ness wants me to say that we have to think of him as, you know, a top two or three player in the league. You know, like the points are there. There's a defensive acumen that's new and, you know, exciting. You know, I guess we have to give it to Connor because we just do, you know, but
Bob.
Yeah.
You're falling. Like I talked about this yesterday. I am waiting for the first Toronto gas bag to throw it out there. Matthews is better than McDavid. Right. We're at the point. I am waiting for that to happen and then rain hell fury from Edmonton upon us.
Well, what it will be, it'll be payback for when Gary Lawless said Patrick Laine was better than Matthews.
Oh, what a dummy.
Right? The anger lasted about, like, that's a long fire. That fire didn't need any little sticks to keep going. That's still blazing. You know, Edmonton will then turn on us when the first... Someone's going to say it. You know, I sent a note to Merrick the other day, and I just said, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid. That's all it said.
Yep.
And he just said, Connor, getting closer.
Yeah. And by the way, that's the right answer.
That's the right answer, because, of course, Jeff never gives the wrong answer about, you know... When it comes to hockey, he chuckles about his hockey. Like he almost treats it like, I don't know, you and wine, you know, like you can laugh about everything on this planet except for wine.
Yep. It's true.
It is so weird, but I like that about you. You need something to keep you honest. And Marner, of course, too, right? This is the problem is they are succeeding so wonderfully that as now everyone starts to ask, you know, do you got to break them up for the overall balance of the team? I mean, how do you break up the team? How do you break up that dynamic duo? You can't do that, can you?
No, you don't. You just go, hey, Nylander and Tavares, both of you have got to perform better. And I got to be careful because the one thing I've learned is even when I throw out a very just basic, non-emotional, statistical thing about Nylander, people get angry. Like, if we want to do sports triggering, say anything negative to Nylander, and you get half the people going, yeah, he's the worst, and the other half that says, the media are horrible human beings. But no, I don't break them up. Tavares and Marner, or excuse me, Tavares and Nylander, they're really talented. Figure it the bleep out.
Yeah, you know, here's what I've been thinking lately, Matt, because you and I have talked on this pod about how we don't want to be classic Toronto Leafs commentators that just need to find the negative out of habit.
Yeah.
But I do think the Tavares thing makes me a little nervous, more so than Nylander, because I just think Nylander is always going to be up and down, you know, and it'll average out to where he scores between 25 and 30 over an 82-game season.
And he's younger.
And, you know, he makes $7 million. That's probably who this guy is. If he could be more consistent, he'd be Marner. But as you and I have said, the mark of a really good player, like a damn good player, is not talent, it's consistency. And he's not that guy, which is why he's not elite. And that's, it's kind of just simple, isn't it? He has games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But the Tavares thing makes me nervous a little bit. You know, it's not just the 5-on-5. You know, it's not like he's not skating well. He's skating well, but if he's 30 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't every statistical model ever created by, you know, the NHL show how when guys hit 30, almost all of them start to drop off? It's not like he's going to be a bad player. But he's going to be making $11 million, and you're going to get a little less from him every year.
100%. Unless you're Brady or LeBron, you know, time and science and biology still has an impact on your body. And and you saw it in that horrible collapse on Monday. It started with a bad turnover by Tavares. And Tavares has been better defensively, but his shooting percentage is pretty lousy. And yeah, no, and listen, he scored, but he scored like the seventh goal the other night, that win against Ottawa. And yeah, there is a small red flag on Tavares, 100%.
You remember when he first came to Toronto and it was the Boston series and he was stuck on Bergeron and he played really well. And everyone was like, wow, this is the grown-up that the lineup needs, while the other kids kind of get better. The other kids did get better, but his game didn't stay at that point. You know, I was saying to somebody the other day, I don't think he's going to be Patrice Bergeron. You know, like, I just don't think we're going to be talking about him for a long time, like the exact same player that he's always been. He's going to be good. He's a damn good player.
Yeah.
$11 million. You know, when you pay someone $11 million, you should never have balance issues in your lineup.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like obviously there's a few of them, but my point is that second line should not be a question mark.
No, what shouldn't be the storyline on that second line shouldn't be, do they need Hyman to save them? How much do they miss Wayne Simmonds? Bleep that. It should be, we're both awesome. It's on both players, but you know, it starts with the center. It starts with Tavares. It should be any other winger should be thrilled to death, not named Jimmy Vesey. He's been bad on any line, but everyone else should be thrilled to death to be with us because we're really good.
Cause the headline is, do they need Zach Hyman? It should be, could Matt Cause score 20 with these guys this year?
Yeah, they be able exactly. To
anybody, Barabanov, well, maybe not him, but just about anybody. And that was you know what? That wasn't a real thing. That was just a cheap shot.
It was
just totally pointless, needless. So, you know, I refuse considering, you know, like, okay, so there was the embarrassing loss, but they redeemed themselves last night. And they're damn good. They're playing some pretty bad teams over and over again, so it's a little hard to say how good they really are. You know, but the points are there. I'm watching that one, and I'm thinking if they get to the playoffs, I want to feel better about that guy than I do.
Oh, yeah, and there's plenty of time to feel better about them, but right now we don't. By the way, Bob, can I do something I've never done before? I workshop a possible Monday opening thought about the Leafs, and you sort of touched on it there.
Okay, yeah, sure. You've workshopped thoughts before, but never 3 days in advance.
I know. Well, you know me, Bob. I'm like, because you know me, I'm a prep freak. I'm always working at least a day in advance. Every commercial break, I'm writing questions for a guest I'm having the next day. But the interesting thing about the Maple Leafs, are they going to have any games this year where the story is, wow, they beat a team better than them? Like, we just saw the Raptors go back-to-back, beat Milwaukee with Kyle Lowry out for nearly 6 of the 8 quarters. And now we get the storyline like, hey, good for the Raptors. They beat clearly a better team. Same thing when they beat Brooklyn. They beat a clearly a better team. Are we going to have that through 56 Leaf games this year?
That's a great question. No.
Yeah.
No, him, Cartwright, good. That was really good. You know, there was a moment there where we thought when they played Montreal, it would accomplish that. Not if better, but at least sort of like on par or at least quite good. They've sort of tapered off. No. And that's the That's the weird thing about this year. I mean, it's kind of fun in a sense. It's almost like, you know, Kramer dominating the dojo.
That's a perfect analogy. But how weird is that? Like, now listen, there could be some injuries and then the first line gets cold. It's going to happen. And let's say Montreal goes on another hot streak where Toffoli is scoring against teams, not just Vancouver, where maybe, you know, the teams are even. It could absolutely happen. But over 56 games, how many times are the Leafs going to go into a night where they're the clear underdog? Not a slight underdog, but they're the clear underdog. I don't think it's going to happen.
I have a ridiculous but perfect idea.
Do it.
More Hutchinson.
Yeah, that solves it. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Tie one hand on your back and let's go.
Yeah. You know what, Bob? I love that idea. Sheldon Keefe to get the team ready for the playoffs. The last 10 games. It's going to be Hutchinson all 10 games. We're resting Freddie.
Oh, man. You know, they're fun to watch. I thought that it would be really exciting, and I was sure we were, like, thinking, oh, they're going to play each other over and over again. There's going to be so much bad blood, intense rivalries. I'm kind of bored of seeing the same teams over and over again. What about you?
There hasn't been the real bad blood. You know, I think because there's only so many, quote unquote, bad blood players. I mean, no Wayne Simmonds, that takes away from it. Like, it feels, unless they're playing Calgary with Kachuk, I guess Ottawa's got the other Kachuk brother. You know, if a Kachuk brother isn't involved, it just doesn't feel like there's a chance. But hell, they played three times against Braden Kachuk. It didn't happen. So, no, there hasn't been the real sports hate we were hoping for.
If this was 1987, there'd be blood everywhere by now. But
oh, yeah.
It really speaks to just how much the game has changed, that you can face each other in this weird sort of way and see the same team over and over and over again. And it still doesn't seem to get the blood boiling. Maybe it will by the end of the year. I mean, there's still plenty of time to go. But I find more often than not, like, these are bad teams, to your point. You know, it's not a real thrill to see if they can beat Calgary or Edmonton. They should. So I don't know. I just kind of, the other day someone misspoke and said, oh, I think they're playing Buffalo tonight. And then they kind of shook their head. Oh, I meant, you know, and they were like, oh, I meant whatever. And I was like, oh, but wouldn't that be great? Let's see how Buffalo looks, you know, like just something else. Let's spice it up a little bit. Like the Matt Cause Valentine's Day, a better wine, a better steak.
Yeah, exactly. And well, basically Buffalo is, they're the Ottawa of the United States right now. And by the way, I know almost nothing that's going on south of the border. Like literally Nathan MacKinnon and Sidney Crosby could have been involved in a skate stabbing fight. I'd have no idea. I just know the Sabres stink.
I saw some shots of Lake Placid. It looks beautiful. Or not Lake Placid, Lake Tahoe.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Let's go there. You know what my first thought was when I saw the shot of Lake Tahoe? They're doing the stadium series or whatever it is.
Let's go 3, 2, 1 and then say it at the same time, okay?
Okay.
Right? Let's say
3, 2, 1.
The Shining.
One. You went to Godfather 2. I went Godfather 2. Okay, you go first. Shining.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? Godfather 2 is even better. Fredo, you it's son Lake- of a bitch. You look great. Bob,
it's Lake Tahoe. Right. When they showed the wide shot of the rink, my first thought was Al Neary fishing with Fredo.
Oh, that's exactly it, Matt. Oh,
yeah.
Fredo,
I'm not going to lie. What's that?
Fredo will be in the ice.
Oh, exactly. He'll be like the loony. He'll be like the lucky loony.
In Salt Lake City?
Yeah. Yeah. Bob, I'm not going to lie. I spent several minutes on today's show not previewing Vegas playing whoever, you know, the Tahoe game. I just talked about Al Neary and fishing.
Yeah, that's such a tragic scene, eh? Poor Fredo.
Oh, God, is it ever.
You know,
it really is.
I'm not dumb. I'm smart. And I want respect. It's not how Pop wants.
You know what, though?
What?
At the very least, Fredo, at least, you know, he was having sex with two cocktail waitresses at the time. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, it ended early, but, you know, he had a pretty good life.
Yeah, Mo Green. Sometimes I gotta bust some skulls. Players couldn't get a drink around here. You know, you and I could just yell Godfather lines at each other for 45 minutes and call it a pod.
Yeah. Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel.
Oh, God, Lee Strasberg. You know, I think that was his only acting role.
What? No.
Yeah. Go to IMDb right now. IMDb right now. Actually, I've got a second computer because I work for Apple. So, of course, I have two computers. They gave me like the Apple laptop for my official.
Really?
Yeah. But I think they just want to be able to monitor it.
See, I'm like a frightened villager and I don't want to, because I got the Skype going. I don't want to open up another window because I feel maybe that'll slow things down. So I don't want to try to go to IMDb. It actually scares me.
No, I'm sorry. It wasn't. In fact, I'm stupid. I should have known this because, you know, he was in Going in Style, if you've ever seen that movie. No, he's been in a bunch of stuff. I'm an idiot. But he hasn't been in much.
Okay.
Only 10 films.
And
Godfather was his first film in 21 years. The one before that was something called China Venture from 1953. Never heard of it.
Wow. Hyman Roth, he was so good in that.
Well, and he's the quintessential acting coach too, right? Like the whole Strasberg method. He's probably the famous acting teacher ever. Although I don't suppose there are many famous ones really. But anyway. So
wow.
Are the Leafs boring right now?
They are a little bit, yeah. Now, yeah, maybe it's because boring. They played Ottawa three times straight. Maybe, you know, if they play better competition, it'll make them more compelling. But no, they've been kind of boring.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Like we said, let's not, you know, watch what you wish for, right?
Yeah. No, that's true. They weren't boring on Monday when they're up 5-1 and they lose 6-5. So, yeah, sometimes boring is nice.
I don't think there's anything to be learned from that except for this. Man, this team's weird. I don't think it's a sign of anything other than just Toronto is weird.
Well, if I do weird, that's a good transition over to the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, my God. They're so weird. Who is this team?
I don't think they know. Fred VanVleet had a quote talking about, and he gave all the proper, you know, provisos off the top end, saying we're not expecting any sympathy. But because of COVID, they're not around each other that much. They can't work out with each other as much. They can't be in meetings with each other. So you don't have the same level of camaraderie. I don't think they know. Nick Nurse is changing the lineups every night because he realizes none of his centers are good. I don't think he knows. And the fans, you know, they lose to Minnesota. They beat Milwaukee twice. They beat Brooklyn. They're under 500, but they've got a positive scoring differential. They're a confusing team.
The centers thing is interesting. Let's put a pin in that and come back to it. The COVID thing, it feels like we don't know how to talk about this with regards to sports. Because we either say it's the most important thing or we treat it like it doesn't exist at all.
Yeah. You know,
like when we assess a team's performance, you know, it feels like we've completely disregarded the fact that everything about their jobs has changed. Some teams don't seem to be affected. And I guess that's why, because somebody's got to win. But I don't even know how to talk about it. Like, it just feels so routine to say, okay, well, this team's not going to play the next three games. Whatever sport it is. I mean, how could that not be a little weird?
Well, it's really weird. I mean, it's why Jason Tatum hasn't been that good. It's why, you know, it's why Eric Kareen mentioned this in The Athletic. There the other day, there was 18 teams in the NBA that ranged from five games under to five games over 500. Last year at the same time, there was 10. So almost double the amount of teams within five games under and over 500. That is a crazy amount of teams in the mysterious middle.
That was a great stat by Kareen. I went to the standings today because I just wanted to see, you know, who was sitting there. I like to check in every couple of days because, you know, you're not watching all the games equally, right? And what really jumped out at me, like, I know it's still early, but the Raptors are in sixth today going into this game against Minnesota, but nobody around them is convincing. Like, three above, three below, like, you could just, like, close your eyes, throw a dart, and who knows who's going to beat who on any given night. And that is so un-NBA. Like, it's so clear who has the balance of power every year. Not this year. Do you believe in Philly?
Well, here's the thing. I only believe in three teams. There's only three teams, and Philly may be fourth. But here's how NBA this is for me. Okay. I believe in the Lakers. Yeah, let's go.
Together, okay? We'll do 3-2-1, and we'll do it in order, okay? You ready? 3-2-1. The Lakers.
Lakers, the Clippers.
And the Bucks. Nets. Oh, really?
Oh, say I don't have the Bucks because Giannis in the last 6 minutes of the first game did nothing. Giannis in the second game the Raptors won, his presence wasn't really felt late. I don't like it's still the same bugaboos with him and the lack of adjustments from Budenholzer. I don't, and I know Drew Holiday was out, but Kyle Lowry was out as well. I don't trust the Bucks.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I probably should have said the Nets. I'm just still not prepared to think that Kevin Durant can stay healthy. Like, it's just you're coming off a bad injury. He's getting older. I just see him going down in my mind. Like, I'm not wishing that on him. I really like his story. And, you know, obviously I'm not rooting for Brooklyn, you know, F Brooklyn. But I don't know. There's just... I just have this image of him limping off, you know, the court in San Francisco against, you know, the Raptors. And, you know, we haven't seen him since. So I just still got to get used to this idea that he's going to be an alpha all the way through all the playoffs. I don't know. It just seems like everybody on that team has a question mark for me. Kyrie, you know, has his question marks. Harden has been beatable in the playoffs. And Durant, I'm just not sure about, you know, if his body can hold up at this point. If it all works, they're unbeatable. I just think there are too many questions about how it could not work. But we'll see.
It's true. There's no team that has more talent than Brooklyn. Not even the Lakers. But you're right. The Durant health issue. Kyrie Irving, we don't even know if he really likes basketball. You know, and just chubby James Harden quitting on one team and, you know, going super cold in big playoff games, you know, throughout his career. Yeah, it's funny. They have both the most talent and the most questions.
And maybe because they have the most talent, you know, like Philadelphia, I really liked them going into this year. I thought Ben Simmons would be better. I didn't think Joel Embiid would be this good. But between the two of them, I thought they, you know, with some good coaching and an improved roster balance, I thought they're going to be dangerous. I still think they could have beat the Raptors that year. Like, if you played that series 100 times, I think Philly wins it more times than Toronto does. But, you know, it just felt like this was the year they were either going to put it together or have to blow it up. And I was putting on put it together. That's where my money's going. But I got questions about them too. Like, it's just, it's such a weird year in the NBA. And let's go back to this center thing, because there was all kinds of buzz about Andre Drummond, what's going to happen. Would you rather see the Raptors shy away from a traditional big if it meant they could be slightly better now? Or do you want to see a kind of a commitment to a different kind of basketball? I'm going somewhere with this. I'm curious.
I don't want them to go get Drummond and have to get rid of Powell and Boucher and other parts. I don't know what I'm going to get. I know Drummond puts up really nice numbers. No, I want them to be this roster because those back-to-back wins against Milwaukee is a great PSA to the rest of the NBA, which is a simple one. Hey, don't forget about us. If you're a star and you want to win, but you don't want to be a savior, come here. We don't need a savior. We just need one more elite piece, and then we can get over the top.
For years, you know, I've liked Andre Drummond, but truthfully, I'm exactly like you. Like, I just wouldn't want to do any deal where we had to give up pieces. It's not like I'm the world's biggest Norm fan. And Boucher, I think, is always going to be lovable, maybe more lovable than awesome.
Yep.
Clearly a nice piece and an amazing story and a great find. But, you know, when it's your guy, you tend to fall in love with them. Like, I see all these people on Raptors Twitter saying, Chris Boucher is the only choice for most improved player of the year. Who else could it possibly be? And you think, well, you know, probably like a half a dozen guys. I'm with you, though. It's kind of like, and I don't know if this is just me being a sucker for a new kind of basketball that doesn't really need a dominant five or even a big five. But, I just wouldn't want that to happen. And I can't tell, if I've just been brainwashed, Matt. Because God knows they could use some rebounding.
Oh, God. Oh, absolutely. But... look, I think they might have even out-rebounded Milwaukee by the end of the game. I mean, I know they need size, but it still goes down to who is out there and who are you going to get rid of? You know, everyone keeps saying Andre Drummond. Well, Drummond may or may not be the solution. And if not him, then who? And then who do you got to get rid of? And then if you get rid of a Powell and a Boucher, who's going to recreate the scoring that Norm Powell brought you or the, you know, Boucher every second or third game, he has these wonderful moments. Like, how do you replace that? Malachi Flynn, Terrence Davis? I don't think so. So no, I've said this so many times. The only time I do a deal is if you're trading Powell or Lowry and you are getting back such a package that from Zach Lowe, Woj, Jason McIntyre, Fox, ESPN, Bleacher Report, and everyone in between, everyone says the same thing. Wow, the Raptors fleece Team X, you know, in that deal. Unless it's something that crazy, I'm not doing it.
Well, that's a bold stand, Matt. So you don't want to do a deal unless it's unanimously regarded as a slam dunk for the Raptors.
It's a pretty hot take by me, Bob. That's why I get paid the medium bucks.
That is bold. That is bold. You know what?
I just don't want to do a deal.
I'm going to go further with this. You ready for this? Because there's been talk about trying to get some help on the wing for the Leafs, some scoring help. I don't think that Kyle Dubas should do it unless everybody agrees it was an amazing deal only for the Leafs.
Bob, you better make sure that there's no paper or dry wood near you. Is there a fire is about to erupt around you?
Well, and you'll keep the fire going, right? Not only can you keep the fire going, you start the fires with your takes.
Oh, God, yeah. My bigger point, jackass, is I don't...
Sorry.
it was the right call by you. I don't do anything. I don't do a bleeping thing unless it's a crazy deal. And by the way, Lowry is a guy that could get you a crazy deal because he's this unique player who can be elite but doesn't need the ball in his hands. There's not a lot of those guys out there.
Well, we all know exactly what we fear. He's the perfect player for the Clippers. He would make them a title winner. You know, he's got great chemistry with two of the guys there already. Just no. Like, I'd be totally cool if Lowry gets dealt, except to the Clippers.
Think about this. Like, but Lowry's perfect. And you're right. And bleep Steve Ballmer and Lawrence Frank and all their tampering they did, just, you know, stalking Kawhi Leonard like John Cusack in an 80s, you know, rom-com. But Lowry would be perfect with Philly. Lowry is perfect with almost any team. He makes everyone around better. He doesn't need to shoot. But if you need him to shoot, he's a pretty good scorer. It's perfect for almost any team.
Yeah, it's so true. Hey, by the way, speaking of John Cusack, you know what's a really underrated John Cusack movie?
Which one?
Okay, well, I'm going to do two levels of this. The entry level answer is Gross Point Blank, which is really good.
Oh, I love that movie so much.
Like, so good. And Dan Aykroyd's so amazing in it. But the even deeper dive into the John Cusack IMDb page is Better Off Dead. Have you ever seen Better Off Dead?
Bob, if I was there in front of you, I would punch you in the throat. Of course I've seen Better Off Dead. You want to spend 20 minutes doing Better Off Dead? Hey, Ricky, I'm sorry I blew up your mom. $2. I can go on. I can go all day with this.
Oh, okay. That's so good. Good for you. I must have watched Better Off Dead 100 times when I was a kid. God, I love that movie. You know what? You know why we're ruining kids? It's not the internet. It's the fact that they don't have enough good, stupid stuff to watch. All their stupid stuff is so serious.
It is. It's all serious, and it's teaching you the lessons of self-esteem and inclusion and diversity. Bleep that. I want something where someone goes, French fries, dressing.
I can't believe you. I was actually going to quote that scene in particular when she's trying to communicate. Oh my God, that's so good. Everybody has, you know what? On our Instagram page, we have to post a trailer to Better Off Dead. Such a great movie. God, you're good at that too. Good for you.
And Charles Emerson Winchester III, David Ogden Steers, he's in that as well.
Oh my God, you're on fire. The final shot with the tracking shot pulling out when they're sitting at the baseball stadium in the car kissing. Like, come on. That's teenage romance. Yeah. We need a John Hughes to come back. That's what we need.
Oh, God. Okay, one last line. When Booger from Revenge of the Nerds, he's on the top of the hill, and he's snorting the hill. He's like, this is pure snow.
All right, my Ricky, I've been in high school for 7 years. I'm no dummy.
Oh my God.
Lane, I've been in high school 7 years. I'm no dummy.
God. Bob, you don't understand. There's a couple of my friends, my twin brother Josh, my friend Tim Morris. The amount of times we talk about Better Off Dead, we're 45. You know, we have, you know, they have children and high paying jobs. It doesn't matter. We still talk about Better Off Dead.
I have two movies from the 80s that I totally love and I feel like are underappreciated. It's Better Off Dead and it's Real Genius with Val Kilmer.
Oh, hell yeah. The popcorn scene.
So good. William Afton. Classic 80s villain.
Yep.
Oh, man. There was so much hope for Val Kilmer, Chris Knight, and Mitch. I'm not even going to go down that road. I loved that movie. Okay, so with the Raptors, are we past the point of trying to figure them out? Like, because you get disappointed when you feel a team is underperforming. I don't know if we should feel that way because I don't know if they're underperforming. I have so little idea of who they are. I don't know how to feel. So I feel like I'm beyond disappointment and I'm just going to stay with hopeful.
Yes. It's funny, Bob. I was talking about this the other day that you basically, we just have to wait till March 25th, the trade deadline, because then we'll find out what Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster feel about this team. Do they do a deal? Do they don't do a deal. And my message to everyone is just relax and enjoy the ride because at the very least, the Raptors will give us a higher level of joy than even the Leafs. Even though Austin Matthews is now the best player in the city of Toronto, but the Leafs or the Raptors give us these joyous wins against teams like Milwaukee or Brooklyn. They give us this high. So just try to enjoy it and don't try to figure them out. Because if Nick Nurse doesn't know who they are, if Fred VanVleet doesn't know who they are, why the hell should we try to figure out who they are?
You know, it's a good segue to you mentioned Austin Matthews being the best player. And we talk about, do they do a deal? If they were to do a deal, you would love to get some draft picks. There's the great double draft of 2022 coming up and you'd like to believe, but the draft is always just such a crapshoot. And I'm looking at the NFL right now. We only have 10 minutes left, and I want to get to the Carson Wentz thing. But we had the conversation in the Goff-Wentz year, who should the Rams take, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like, which of these two quarterbacks is more likely to become generational? Well, they've both been disposed by
the Rams, know.
Right? And this happens more often than not. Like, you said to me that you thought the Jags going with Trevor Lawrence was not a no-brainer, but they should do it. I don't know enough about scouting to say if you're right or wrong, but it feels like statistically, those top quarterbacks don't pay off more often than they do.
They don't. Oh, no. Like, it's funny. The Eagles gave up so many draft picks to get Carson Wentz, and now they're paying another team $30 million to take him. Jared Goff has been traded. Go back the year before. Jameis Winston was the number one pick. Mm-hmm. Marcus Mariota was number two. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody know nothing about nothing. There's only a few times where it really feels can't miss. I felt that with Andrew Luck. I felt that with Peyton Manning. And I do feel that with Trevor Lawrence because as a freshman, the guy beat Alabama. So I do feel that about him. But, man, the crazy thing is the NFL is a kabillion dollar industry with 32 billionaire owners for billionaire producing teams. And yet none of them know how to figure out what a good quarterback is.
When you think about the AFC and the two quarterbacks that seem poised to dominate, and maybe three, if you want to use Baltimore in there too, but like the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. And it's not like they were in the catbird seat to get the best possible quarterbacks. It was kind of like who was left to them.
Yeah. So,
you know, this whole idea of, you know, we're going to lose for, you know, is Tua going to be any good?
A year ago, I would have said, everyone, go get him. Now I'm like, ooh, he's a captain check down quarterback.
Right? So, like this whole thing with Carson Wentz, it feels smart for Indy. You know, like people say, oh, maybe Frank Reich can coach him up. And, you know, like We'll see, right? But it just feels like over and over every year, there's this story of which new quarterback did we think we could trust, but we find out we can't.
Yep. Oh, no. Yeah, Bob, you're absolutely right. Pause for 1 second. I just want to quickly mention, if you need a lawyer that you can trust, try our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, the sponsor of this podcast, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. A small family-run law firm. His wife is like a brilliant accountant. His children speak like three languages. They shame me last time I saw them. So that is, if you need a lawyer, definitely someone to check out. So yes, jeffpollock.com. But yeah, Bob, and by the way, about Carson Wentz, everyone thinks that because he's back with Frank Reich, it'll succeed. Maybe, but what people forget, that 2017 Eagles team was stacked. They had two Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. They had a Pro Bowl tight end in Zach Ertz. Now, I know none of their receivers or running backs were elite, but they had two B-plus running backs, like three or four B-plus level receivers. That team was so good that Nick Foles looked elite in the playoffs. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. Carson Wentz is with Frank Reich, and then everything's going to work.
So if you're like, you've got some people in your life who are devoted Phillies fans, you know, you got your buddy Tom Longhurst, you've got Gareth Wheeler, you know, you're an NFC East guy. So I'm sure every time something happens with any of those teams, people want to talk to you about it. Yep. What level of blowing it did the Eagles do here in your mind? Like catastrophic, understandable, like how quick are you to criticize them here?
Here's the one caveat. And by the way, it's the Eagles, not the Phillies. Which one of us has been drinking? And by the way, the answer, me.
I'm at the end of a 3-day fast.
Oh, no.
I haven't
eaten. Oh, yeah, that is that time of year, isn't it?
If I sound loopy, it's because, honestly, I haven't had solid food in 3 days.
I'm not going to tell you about the wine pairing event I was at the other day. I'll get back to your question.
Okay.
In the end, Philadelphia won a Super Bowl. Yeah. I don't think they would have won it without Carson Wentz, even though he got injured in 2017. So that trumps everything else. But wow, did they fuck that up. I mean, they gave up so many draft picks to get him. And then I don't know what happened between him and the organization and Doug Peterson. What I've been hearing is that Carson just never fully recovered from them winning the Super Bowl with Nick Foles and then them drafting Jalen Hurts. So a lot of that I put on Carson Wentz. Aaron Rodgers saw Green Bay move up in the draft to take Jordan Love, and Aaron Rodgers won the MVP. So for Carson, I'm not saying Carson is not as good as, of course, he's not as good as Aaron Rodgers, but a lot of this goes on Carson Wentz. So Eagles fans that I know, they're depressed, they're upset, they felt like they lost out on an opportunity, but at the very least, they beat Tom Brady when Brady threw for over 500 yards and no turnovers. So they still have that safety blanket to hold on to.
It reminds me a bit of the Raptors in that if the Raptors are headed slowly towards a kind of a purgatory that'll take a long time to break out of, it just doesn't matter because they won. And like that is the right answer always, right? It's not lining up for possible wins down the road. It's like, did you win now? I mean, it's crazy. When you think about how much love and time that we put into stuff, like the Jays haven't won since 93, Matt. They haven't won since 93. They've been good. You know, they've taken a couple good shots at it, but they haven't won since 93. They might not win for another 30 years.
Oh, I didn't say that.
You know,
you're right.
But I'm right. You know, they might not. So it's like, if you have a chance to actually do it and it happens, you got to let yourself be good with it. It has to be like if the Raptors were to fall apart, if Masai was to start making some bad moves, if in 2 years you're like, oh, geez, man, we've really dropped off. You know what? Live with it. Live with it. You were on top. Almost nobody ever gets to be on top.
Here, here.
That feels like a good place to go. Are we done?
It really does, Bob. My glass of Viognier is done. I'm going to be shifting over to this really well-made Village-level Burgundy Red. So, yeah, this feels like a good time to end it. And great. Yes, that was ultimate douchebag by me.
I'm having some vegetable broth.
Good for you, Bob.
You know what? No. No, because you're happier than I am. So who's kidding who?
Yeah, but, you know, you're probably in better shape than me. So, you know, even Steven.
What does it matter?
That's a good point.
I just can't do happy as good as you.
It's true. Very few people can. I have very few skills. Actually, I was saying this to my girlfriend and her sister. We're talking about how my twin brother is very handy. My older brother, Scott's very handy. It's like, what the hell do I have? And I'm like, I'm the most emotionally centered. No one does happy better than I do.
It's just, it's almost, when you meet someone who's actually happy, they seem nuts.
Well, then call me Mr. Peanut or who's wearing the top hat and the cane?
I always figure you must be
Mr. Peanut. Yeah.
Scam, but it's not. I explained to someone, you told me once, I said, how do you not get upset? You say, I feel myself getting upset. And then I imagine a time when I'm not, and I just project myself there.
It's true.
I said that to somebody and they kind of stopped and their jaw dropped. It's like, that's brilliant. I was like, yeah, not only that, you can actually do it too.
Yes, I did that during my worst heartbreak. Yeah, I'm like, nope, just going to project myself to when this is all done. It's so true. We go into this more, but we're well out of time. Bob?
I just want to point this out quickly. I knew you during that heartbreak. And you
yes,
said,
you did.
I'm going to go to Naples, Florida. I'm going to go for 2 weeks, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to be fine. And you know what happened? Exactly that.
It's true. That's all true. Man, we could tell that whole story. Ooh, that was a tough moment.
But honest to God, like, if there's anybody who was ever built to manage life, cause, I look, we could end every podcast exactly the same way. Be like Matt.
Just try to be taller and leaner.
Doesn't matter, though, does it?
Nah, not really.
Not really. Enjoy your wine, Matt.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.